Listener, after spending hours researching the darkest corners of true crime, sometimes you need something to help you decompress. That's where Mood comes in. Mood.com is an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC products right to your door. We're talking gummies, flower, pre-rolls, edibles. They've got products designed for specific vibes. Need to wind down after a heavy episode? They've got sleepy time gummies. Want something for focus during those long research sessions? They've got that too. They even have options for feeling euphoric or, let's say, enhancing other activities. Personally, I'm a fan of their Sleepy Time Advanced Gummies. They kick in fast and actually help quiet my brain after a long day of diving into cases. Everything ships discreetly. It's all backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. And best of all, Obscura listeners get 20% off their first order. Head to mood.com and use code Obscura at checkout for 20% off. That's mood.com with code Obscura. Listener, in the shadowed corners of rural Florida, a single act of betrayal ignited a firestorm of deception, heartbreak, and irreversible loss. Welcome to this episode of Obscura, where we unravel the chilling threads of a love triangle turned deadly, exploring human frailties that drive ordinary people to unimaginable extremes. Tonight, we step into the world of Heather Strong, Joshua Folgham, and Amelia Carr, piecing together the whispers of motive, the echoes of confession, a brutal murder, and the stark judgments of justice that followed. Prepare to question the boundaries of passion and possession as we journey through a tale that reminds us how thin the line can be between devotion and destruction. All right, let's get on with it.
Welcome, listener. I'm glad you're here. Take a seat next to the fire.
Welcome to Obscura, where we shine a light on the dark.
Exhausted.
About my bedtime.
I'm trying to make this quick as possible, okay? I appreciate you coming up here.
You look tired, too.
Very tired. Appreciate you coming up here. Understand, you're not pressured to be here. This is all voluntary. That door is only closed for privacy. It's not locked. You're more welcome to get up and walk out at any time, okay? Right here, we're trying to get some things together. We're trying to sort out some differences and get a clear understanding. Okay. Excuse me.
Sorry.
Give me your name, girl.
Amelia. E-M-I-L-I-A. Yeah. Y. I'm sorry. Y-E-R-A.
Y.
E-R-A. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's my first and last. Did you need my middle?
Oh. Let me just get some understanding between you and Josh.
Mm-hmm.
How long you guys been knowing each other?
This August will be about 2 years.
So you know each other for about 2 years?
Yeah.
How long you guys dated?
4 months last year.
4 months?
Mm-hmm.
How far along were you?
I'm 8 months.
So you're 8 months? Yeah.
Okay.
Amelia Lily Carr came into the world on August 4th, 1984. Born to Maria Zayas and Paleo Vanalis, a man who had arrived in the United States through the Mariel boatlift in the early 1980s, and went by the name David. Maria Zayas grew up in a family of Mexican farm workers, people who spent their days bent over in fields under the steady heat, with little access to schooling beyond the basics. Maria left high school without finishing, and her cognitive abilities placed her in a range of lower functioning, making everyday decisions and planning a constant challenge. By the age of 13, she had already become a mother, giving birth to her first child, Christina, after a sexual relationship with a young man living in the same labor camp where her family resided. A second child, Humberto Perez, followed soon after, expanding the family unit in a setting where resources were scarce and stability was hard to maintain. The family settled in the rural areas of Central Florida, Living in modest accommodations typical of migrant worker communities, with trailers and small houses clustering along dirt roads, in 1982, Maria met Paleo Vanellis, and they married, bringing Amelia into a household already marked by the demands of raising young children. Amelia had three siblings, her brother, Humberto Perez, and her sisters, Cristina and Milagro, who was known within the family as Miracle. Both Cristina and Milagro dealt with severe disabilities that affected their daily lives in different ways, requiring extra attention and care from the family members around them. Cristina's condition left her particularly vulnerable, while Milagro's birth-related issues meant she needed ongoing support, adding layers of responsibility to the household routine. When Amelia was only 5 years old, state authorities stepped in and removed her from the home, along with her siblings, following reports of sexual abuse inflicted on Cristina by their father and grandfather. The intervention disrupted the family structure, placing the children in temporary care, while investigations proceeded. Eventually, the family reunited, excluding Cristina at first. After they moved to Boardman, a small community in northwest Marion County, characterized by its quiet, isolated trailers and storage units scattered amid wooded lots, Cristina stayed nearby with her grandmother, but she made regular visits to the family home, each one supervised to ensure safety, though the arrangement still exposed her to the presence of her abuser on occasion.
Tell me the relationship between you, Josh, and Heather.
They split up. Me and him tried a relationship, and then in December, he wanted to work things out for his kid's sake, and we parted ways. And we just agreed that when she came along, we'd have some kind of civil relationship, and then everything happened in January where I guess she had him arrested for some type of gun charge. I'm sorry, I'm exhausted.
Tell me about that.
I don't even know the whole story behind that. All I know is I got a call from Marion County Jail from him saying that he was in there. She had told the cops that he pulled a gun on her, and he told me he didn't. And they arrested him because I guess there was a gun at the house, which was my dad's at one point.
Where's that gun at now?
In one of y'all's lockers.
Okay.
So, and he got out in February, and we've been talking, trying to have, you know, some kind of civil communication, and we've been trying to work things out and see if we could possibly try a relationship again. So things have been rocky, and it's hard when you got five kids between you, between different people.
How many kids do you have?
Three.
You got three kids?
Yeah.
And then she has?
Two
kids.
Amelia was still a toddler when the abuse against Cristina came to light. Too young to fully comprehend the events unfolding around her. As she grew older, however, the pattern shifted toward her. Her father began grooming her at a young age, with the abuse starting around the age of six and continuing steadily through her childhood and into her teenage years, lasting until her senior year in high school. Her grandfather had been involved earlier, fondling her genitals and soliciting sexual acts in exchange for money, as far back as when she was four. The abuse from her father included routine touching of her breasts as she developed, and instances where she was made to shower with him and wash his penis. During this time, Maria focused much of her attention on caring for Milagro, whose disabilities required constant oversight. Leaving Amelia to spend more time alone with her father or helping with visits to Cristina.
Explain the relationship between you and her.
There wasn't really ever one. We had a little bit of contact over the 4 months because she would, when she felt up to it, allow him to see his kids. So we had some kind of contact, but I usually got the, I'm going to kill you, you know, you're a bitch, you're a whore, blah, 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 because me and him had a relationship off and on for the 2 years, almost 2 years. So we pretty much maintained our distance.
Okay. Have you and her ever got into it about anything?
No. I've kept my distance. I mean, over the phone. But actual person to person, no, she could actually be pretty civil when we had to be.
Right. When was the last time you saw her?
A couple days after he went to jail. Because she asked me to babysit the kids for a few hours so she could go to work.
And what? She asked you to babysit the kids?
And I told her I wasn't too sure about it because we had an awkward kind of relationship. And she said, well, Mackenzie really likes you and she loves you and she'd rather you babysit him. So I was there for a few hours, babysat.
Where'd you babysit them at?
South Shore Fish Camp.
Okay.
The trailer they used to live in.
Uh-huh.
And I was there for a few hours, babysat. She came home and Jamie gave me a ride home.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure you've heard that name before. Okay. Yeah, he's my youngest son's father.
So you and Jamie got a relationship.
We have a kid, yeah.
Okay. And then Jamie had a relationship with
her.
With her.
It's a mess.
Okay. Was there
animosity? No.
Yeah.
He denies the baby. He's had nothing to do with him since he was born.
How old is he?
He'll be 3 in August.
He has no card, had nothing to do with the baby.
No. He's supposedly seen him, you know, he claims him around certain people and then around other people. Oh, that's not my kid.
Right.
So.
By her senior year, Amelia grew concerned that her father might turn his attention to Milagro, her youngest sister, with whom she shared a close bond. Amelia had always been protective of Milagro, helping care for her since she was small, given her own strength and height compared to her sister's fragility. To prevent this, Amelia reported the abuse to someone at her school, breaking years of silence about what had happened to her. Her father was arrested and held in jail, pending trial. While incarcerated, he attempted to arrange a hit on his wife Maria, his daughter Amelia, and his mother-in-law, a plot uncovered by the Marion County Sheriff's Office, leading to additional charges of solicitation to commit first-degree murder. When Amelia was subpoenaed for a pretrial deposition on the sexual abuse charges, she recanted her statements, influenced by pressure from her mother, who criticized her for breaking up the family. Despite the recantation, her father remained in custody, pleaded guilty to the solicitation charge, and was sentenced to prison, where he later died. As a young teenager, Amelia's family gathered enough money to enroll her in a modeling school in Tampa, providing her with training in poise and presentation. In high school, she participated in the ROTC program, finding structure in the drills and uniforms. She expressed interest in joining the Marines, a goal that brought a sense of accomplishment to her family. She went on to complete certification as a licensed massage therapist, gaining practical skills for employment. At 16, however, her mother introduced her to an older man, leading to a pregnancy that amounted to statutory rape. The couple married and lived together, welcoming their first child, a son named Joshua. The development ended her plans for the military. Accounts described Amelia as a dedicated mother and efficient housekeeper during this period. She became pregnant with a second child, but the marriage encountered problems and ended in divorce after a few years.
So you hadn't seen her since, what was the last time you saw her?
That night I babysat, which was the Saturday after Josh got arrested. And my son turned 7 January 8th. I don't remember if that was a Thursday or Friday. So that Saturday had to be the 9th or the 10th.
Of January.
Yeah.
So that was January the 8th or the 9th?
Yeah, well, it wasn't the 8th because that was my son's birthday. It was that Saturday. I babysat for a few hours.
And that's when she was living in the trailer park.
Mm-hmm.
And you haven't seen or talked to her since then?
Mm-mm.
Okay. You had indicated that Josh had been trying to find her.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, because his daughter, she asked about her mom, you know, Deborah's mom. And he's asked people, and no one's seen her. And from what I understand from people in the fish camp, because they lived there off and on for 5 years, she has a tendency to flee. And she pops up 3-4 weeks later, you know? So he just told me, he said, babe, I don't know where she's at. You know, he goes, I don't know.
Where did he tell you she was?
He told me he didn't know. I mean, normally she, from what Robbie told me, is she hauls by the Mississippi or she hauls off with a guy. Like when she left in August that we actually tried a relationship, she met a guy and known him 30 minutes and moved in with him the next day. She has a very flighty personality. And we, it'd be nice to locate her. I mean, we have an 8-year-old girl who's crying looking for her mom. Mom won't call, mom won't make contact, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's just, I have 3 kids who have fathers who have no contact with them. And, you know, it's just, it's messed up. So, I mean, he's asked, he's gone to the, you know, asked people what he can do. He's
asked people like who?
Like, okay, Child Sports is trying to come after me. He told them, he said, look, I don't even know where she's at. I've got the kids right now. So I guess they freezed it temporarily till everything is situated. So right now it's a mess. It is a tangled up mess. We don't know where she's at.
Well, okay, he told somebody else, and I'm just wondering that he thinks that she's in Mississippi. Did he tell you the same thing, or he just hadn't told you at all where
he
thinks?
No, he told me he wouldn't doubt if she was in Mississippi. You know?
Did he tell you the last time he had contact with her? Did he tell you how he ended up getting the kids, if the kids live with her?
Oh, yeah, they were living with her, and she had called him to meet him at a store to pick up the kids and to bring them back to his mom's house, and from what I understand from Mackenzie, she left with some guy in a truck, which was, if it's the same guy, it's the guy that was seen in South Shore Fish Camp driving a white dually. I don't know.
Okay. So he told you that he picked her up from the store.
With the kids.
And she was with them.
Mm-hmm.
And he drove her and the kids back to...
to his mom's.
To his mom's house.
To drop the kids off. And that she asked him to drop her off.
Drop her off where?
I think Petro.
Okay, he asked her, she asked him to drop her off at the Petro.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the last time he said he saw her.
Yeah.
When he dropped her off at the Petro.
Yep, there's a gentleman up there. Really good friend of hers, Wayne.
Up at the Petro?
Yeah, he's a gentleman that drives a white dually.
And he works at the Petro?
No, he's a trucker.
He's a trucker? So you think she's with Wayne?
I don't know. I don't know. But I do know that when we were trying to get all the kids' belongings from Spar, where they were living, that the landlord told him that he would not okay anybody getting any belongings out of there until he had contact with Heather. And a couple days later, after her mom had called him asking if he had seen or heard from her, and he gave her mom Wayne's number. And from
who gave her mom Wayne's number?
Josh.
Josh gave Heather's mom Wayne's number?
Okay. Because I had it.
You still have Wayne's number?
I know it, yeah.
What's Wayne's number?
And I know.
And that's the guy she's supposed to be with.
Well, that's the guy she meets up with.
That's the trucker guy with the beard and white dually. Okay, I'm going to go out and call Wayne.
And a few days later after he gave her that
number. Have you guys called Wayne? Talked to Wayne?
We've tried, no, there's no answer. When her mom called, from what I understand, because he's married, he kind of got an attitude and hung up. But 3 days later, Heather, from what the landlord said over there at Spar, she called and made contact with them and told the landlord that only her husband could pick up her kids' belongings. So you might want to contact him because she's had contact with him. But she hasn't had contact with Josh's mom, none of the family. So that's why we're all kind of don't know what's going on right
okay,
now.
Okay, let me go out and try to call Wayne right now. All right.
Amelia embraced her role as a parent, making her children the center of her daily life. After the divorce, Amelia became pregnant with her third child while single. She later met and married Jamie Carr, but during this marriage, she encountered Joshua Folgham. The marriage to Jamie ended in divorce in October 2008, by which time Amelia was pregnant with her fourth child. In a later psychological evaluation, forensic psychologist Dr. Ava Land met with Amelia, conducted interviews, and administered at least one test. Dr. Land found no signs of serious mental illness. Amelia displayed a flat demeanor when expressing emotions. Along with some symptoms of post-traumatic stress and anxiety, Dr. Land assessed her intelligence as above average, quite bright, with an IQ score of 125. The evaluation linked Amelia's development to her family environment, noting Maria's intellectual limitations affected her parenting. Dr. Land detailed the sexual abuse, starting with the grandfather fondling her genitals and requesting sex acts for money in early childhood, followed by the father's abuse from age 5, including breast fondling and forced washing in the showers, which stopped when Amelia reported it to protect Milagro. Dr. Land noted that Amelia acted out her past abuse in her adult relationships, but was not submissive and showed manipulative tendencies.
The relationship between you and her, I know for a fact that you and her at least got into an argument one time, okay?
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Here's the thing about the new year. You don't need to become a completely different person. Maybe you just need to feel a little lighter. We all carry stuff around. Doubt, old fears, pressure we put on ourselves. And sometimes, it's hard to see what's actually weighing us down when you're the one carrying it. That's where therapy comes in. Having someone with an outside perspective can help you understand your patterns, your relationships, your motivations, the stuff that's harder to untangle on your own. BetterHelp has over 30,000 licensed therapists and has helped more than 5 million people. They match you based on a short questionnaire, and with over 12 years of experience, they typically get it right the first time. If not, you can switch therapists whenever you need to. Their average rating is 4.9 out of 5, based on over 1.7 million client reviews. BetterHelp makes it easier to get matched online with a qualified therapist. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com. Listener, Chime is changing the way people bank. Fee-free and smarter banking built for you. Not like old-school banks that charge you overdraft and monthly fees. No, listener, it's built for you, not the 1%. Chime isn't just another banking app. They unlock smarter banking for everyday people with products like MyPay, giving you access to up to $500 of your paycheck anytime and getting paid up to 2 days early with direct deposit. Some old banks still can't do this. And forget overdraft fees, minimum balance fees, and monthly fees. Chime turns everyday spending into real rewards and progress. And you can stack the benefits. Bank fee-free plus overdraft coverage you can count on, and it helps you build your credit history stress-free. Earn up to 3.5% APY on savings, 8 times higher than traditional banks. I love Chime. My younger self would have benefited from this. Chime is not just smarter banking. It is the most rewarding way to bank. Join the millions who are already banking fee-free today. It takes just a few minutes to sign up. Head to chime.com/obscura. That is chime.com/obscura.
Chime is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. Members FDIC. Spot me eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Timing depends on submission of payment file. Fees apply at out-of-network ATMs. Bank ranking and number of ATMs according to U.S. News and World Report 2023. Chime checking account required.
And clarify this now, because I know for a fact that this happened. That when you guys got into that argument, you grabbed her by her hair. You remember that?
Oh, my goodness. Are you kidding
me? Tell me about that.
Who told you that? Because
tell me about that.
That was about a babysat. That she came in and we kind of talked a little bit and I told her I had to go. She started arguing with me about not seeing Josh, and I told her I hadn't spoken to him since we split up in December, and said she was going to try to work things out with him, and that was it. And I told her I was leaving. Trust me, if I had put my hands on her,
tell me what happened by this.
She would have had me in jail.
Well, you put your hands on her because you grabbed a handful of her hair. So tell me about that incident.
I didn't grab her. We were talking and we were kind of getting into a little bit of an argument. That's when I told Jamie, can we just go?
So Jamie was there too?
Yeah.
Who else was there?
At that time, it was just us three and the kids were in the bedroom asleep.
Just you guys three?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you were there, Jamie was there,
mm-hmm.
and Heather was there, and I'm telling you that I know for a fact that something happened, where do you think I get that information from?
From Jamie.
Okay. Tell me about what happened.
We were arguing because she wanted me to keep
happened?
My distance. Nothing. I told Jamie, let's go. I don't want to be here. I have my son.
You grabbed a handful of her hair, you grabbed a knife, and you put it to her throat.
No, I didn't, because if I did, I'd be sitting and counting.
No. You guys made a mutual agreement that nobody was going to call law enforcement. Nobody was going to do anything after you guys settled down. You need to be straight up and honest with me.
Okay, I'm telling you how to put my hands on her.
No,
she had me arrested.
No. I'm telling you what happened. I'm asking you to be straight up. You're not going to get in trouble for that, but you don't need to sit up here and continue to lie to me. You are lying to me.
Okay, me and Jamie don't have a good history.
Okay.
We really don't.
There's some other things. I'm just opening Pandora's box a little bit. And this is the time for that you need to be straight up and honest with me. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Again, you don't need to get yourself into trouble with that baby.
Oh, and I know, and I'm being honest with you.
If I know that little tidbit, there's a lot more that I know. There's a lot more people that I have talked to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? This is your opportunity for you to be straight up with me. some shit went sour, okay, clean your slate.
Okay, what I'm telling you is that's the last time I saw her was because we got into that argument.
You don't like her.
I don't have a problem with her.
Now you don't.
No, I've stepped back many times.
Now you don't. There's other people has come forward about some statements that you have made.
In regards to?
Some statements you have made. I'm telling you, if you want me to go down this road, it's not going to look pretty for you.
Okay, but
what This is the opportunity. Listen, you two guys are sleeping with the same damn man. And you can't sit up here and tell me that, oh, you guys had an amicable relationship.
Because that's bullshit.
You didn't like her. She didn't like you.
Okay, I agreed to babysit that.
Yes, you did agree to babysit that.
And when we got into it, I chose to leave.
You didn't want her. You don't want her in the picture because you know that Josh would go back to her. Josh would choose her over you any day.
And I you know that for a fact. Many times so that he could be with his kids. I have three other kids I've raised by myself.
Raising a child by myself is not a big deal. I can only help you if you help yourself.
Okay, but what I'm trying to tell you is we got into an argument and I was ready to go because I am pregnant. Why would I put my hands on someone while I'm pregnant and run the risk of getting hurt?
It happened. Did it not?
No.
You never got into a conversation with somebody, okay? Because I'm finna open up another one, and this is the last one I'm gonna open up because you're gonna get yourself in a hell of a lot of trouble, okay? I'm tired.
You're tired,
and you're lying to me, okay? And you're gonna get yourself into trouble. It's gonna be a very, very long night.
In 2003, Amelia Carr, Joshua Folgham, and Heather Strong moved from Mississippi to Marion County, Florida, settling in the area's network of small towns and rural properties. Joshua Folgham was born on August 16, 1981, a man with a bald head, an ordinary appearance, and a history of violent behavior, working in lawn maintenance jobs that involved routine repairs and mowing lawns. His relationship with Heather Strong began when she was about 15 and he was 22, marking the start of a long, unstable partnership filled with breakups and reconciliations. They had two children together, one around 8 years old and the other about two. After years of this pattern, they married on December 26, 2008, in a ceremony that followed their turbulent history. In November 2008, Amelia had become engaged to Joshua Folgham, but he married Heather Strong instead, just 1 month later. Despite this, Amelia stayed in contact with both Heather and Joshua after the wedding. Statements from Carr's family indicated she sometimes babysat Heather's two children, showing that the three adults continued to interact socially and in family matters.
You got into a conversation with someone, or you offered someone some money. Oh, obviously you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I've heard this rumor.
It's a rumor?
Yeah.
How does it more than one person know about it?
Because where we live, if you
tell me about it.
Let me guess, Jason Watshaw?
Tell me about it. Why is it that I have to open something up for you to say, and I'm going to sit up here, and I'm asking you a question. Very specific questions that I'm asking you, okay? If there's anything else that I need to know, you need to tell me. I think that would be one that I come up, hey, somebody just said a rumor, or this bullshit rumor is going on, or this is going on, or that's happening. You got to walk yourself into some shit that you can't get out of. I'm telling you right now. This is your opportunity, and I only knock once.
Okay, well, what I'm telling you is, me and her got into it, and I asked to leave. Well, after that, there were rumors from Jamie, Jason, that I was supposedly trying to pay someone to get rid of her, this and that. I'm not going to stoop to that kind of a level over a man. I'm sorry. It's not worth it. I have three kids I've raised by myself. This is another one I can raise by myself. I wouldn't do that. And they have done nothing but made my life hell for as long as I can remember. Jamie Akam, Jason Watshaw. Those are two people who, for as long as I can remember, have made my life hell.
Okay.
Me and Jamie don't get along because he knows I'm in the process of trying to come after him for child support. So right now, anything he can do to harm me, he has tried.
Who else do you have issues with that you think that would just rely on me?
Anyone associated with Jamie Akam's family.
Give me a name.
Oh, his brother Josh. His brother Josh, his girlfriend Chrissy. her brother Timmy, anyone associated with him.
You gotta name everybody that's gonna come up here and lie on you.
No, I'm just naming people that are associated with Jamie.
I'm telling you, okay? Someone was present the day that you had that, and you just named two people that was present in a vehicle with you when you offered someone $500.
Where would I have
to help?
Sorry, go ahead.
To help you get rid of Heather. There's another conversation you had with someone. You're soliciting to commit murder.
How?
That's serious. And I got more than one person telling me that. Okay? Listen to me. I got more than one person telling me that. Okay? That don't look good for you. This is your time. Okay? Because when we go get Josh, okay, it's either you or Josh. So you make your decision. Do you owe Josh that? Or do you owe your kids that? This is the time. Tonight.
But when
if you're going to sit up and lie to me, I'd rather you just look at me, okay, and not say a word. But if you're going to continue to lie to me, I'm going to make your life very, very hard. I'm just being honest to you. Because I'm trying to give you opportunity, sweetheart, to do the right thing. May have gotten out of hand. You got a baby right there you got to think about. If it happened, that's fine. If it's out of anger, that's fine. I understand. I'd be pissed off at it too, because I like this man, and this man constantly goes back to this girl.
But why would I hurt her is what I don't understand.
Why? Because you can get her out of the way.
But you know what? In 2 years, me and him have been off and on, off and on.
And you're tired of that. But now you have a kid from him, from Josh. You have no other kids from Josh, do you?
I've been off and on with Jamie for 10 years. 10 years.
Oh, I wouldn't... Let me tell you something. So you telling me the conversation with Christy never happened?
With who? Christy?
Mm-hmm.
I never said anything to her. I mean, I was mad. And I told her that I was pissed off about the whole situation.
Exactly. You never had a conversation with Christy to help you?
No, not Christy. And
you
never had
a conversation with Jason?
No. I don't associate with them.
So why would that come out?
Because of Jamie. If you knew...
Two separate people.
Not two separate. People associated with Jamie.
And everybody hates you.
If you only knew.
So you're saying that you never grabbed a knife?
No, I never grabbed a knife.
You never grabbed a handful of her hair?
No, because she would have beat my butt. Trust me. I'm pregnant. She didn't want me having this kid. She was
pregnant. Sit tight and think about this, okay?
Okay.
The marriage between Heather and Joshua lasted only a short time, plagued by conflicts. In early January 2009, Joshua was arrested for aggravated assault after Heather reported that he had pointed a shotgun at her face, though she dropped the charges later. By early 2009, they had separated and were entangled in disputes over custody of their children. Heather filed at least two petitions for domestic violence injunctions against Joshua due to ongoing issues with their relationship. During this period, Heather worked in food service at the Iron Skillet restaurant in Redick, Florida, a truck stop eatery with booths and counters, serving simple meals to locals and travelers. Court records and trial testimonies described increasing tension between Amelia and Heather. Witnesses observed confrontations, including one where Amelia pulled a knife on Heather and held it to her throat after Heather refused to help Joshua out of jail following his January 2009 arrest. Acquaintances intervened to separate them. The Florida Supreme Court's opinion on Carr's case noted that Heather avoided coming within 5 feet of Amelia. After this incident, Joshua frequently stayed with Heather until arguments arose. Then he would move in with Amelia. This back and forth continued for several years. Eventually, Joshua and Amelia had a child together, and Amelia was pregnant with their second when the events leading to the murder occurred.
Did Josh ever talk to you about a letter that Heather supposedly had wrote?
No.
Just wondering if you know anything about a letter that she was supposed to be giving him custody of the kids or anything like that.
His sister mentioned something to me about it, but not him.
What did she say to you?
Just that Heather had signed a letter saying that if she left, she wanted to know that anytime she came back, she could see the kids.
And who wrote this letter? Right?
I don't know. I haven't seen it.
You ever seen the letter?
No, I just heard about it. I'm not really close with his family. I mean...
So why would she tell you about that? You're not close to him?
Well, because me and his sister, we kept contact, even when me and him split up in December because of the baby. So she would just tell me little tidbits here and there.
Well, let me tell you where I'm at.
Okay.
Josh, he's right in the next room.
Well, I heard a lot of anger.
Okay. You're telling me that Josh told you, and we're going to go over this again, mm-hmm. that he picked Heather and the kids up from the house or store.
Someone's play, yeah.
Okay. And he drove them back to his mom's house.
Mm-hmm.
And that he dropped Heather off at the Petro.
Yeah, that was my understanding.
He's now saying that that's not what he said.
Okay.
That he picked the kids up. Heather was there by herself. He left her there at the house, okay, or the store. He went to his mom's house with the kids, and that Heather called him later and said, come meet me up at Petro.
Okay.
Okay. Does that, that don't sound right to you? Does that sound like something's just not right? Do you, honestly, you think Josh is capable of doing something or would do something to her?
Honestly, no.
Why?
I really don't. Because in 11 years of all the crap they've been through.
He's beat her ass in 11 years.
Yeah.
I have reports like this where he has threatened her. He's beat her ass and he's put a gun on her and Benjamin. And that's what he went to jail for.
Okay? And that got tossed out.
You know why he got tossed out?
Yeah.
Hmm? Because Josh's mom called Heather threatening her, and Heather went and dropped charges. That's why that got tossed out. You see where I'm going with this?
I don't think he would hurt the mother of his kids. I really don't. I mean, after everything,
she's taking the kids away from him. She's tired of getting her ass whooped. She's tired of it. She's tired of Josh ruling her life. Yeah, she jumps from man to man. That's clear. That's understand. Okay, we all understand that. That's what she's done. Josh cares more about her, and I'm not trying to hurt your feelings, than he does you, okay? And he's pissed off because every time she gets with another man, he gets pissed off. That's why he called Jamie and told Jamie to leave her. Called him back and said, we're back together. Don't ever call her again. And there's something in there that I think you know.
Well, Jamie was at my house that night, him and Jason. They showed up at my house at 11 o'clock drunk.
What night?
We'll say 15th. Because my mom stood at the door. My mom doesn't trust Jamie. Jamie tried to kill me 2 years ago. And he showed up at the house at 11 o'clock at night. My mom stood right by the door and listened to everything. And he sat there and he basically, you know how guys are talking crap when they're drunk, that he was going to burn Josh's mom's house down, this and that, because he was tired of looking like a fool. And
my mom was pissed off because Josh called him and told him that he wanted him to leave that girl.
Well, see, I didn't know any of this.
But now it doesn't make sense to you because you say Jamie came to your house and he's telling you all because he's pissed off. Exactly. Because he's pissed off because he shows up back to the house and she's not there because she left with Josh and the kids. You see where I'm going with this?
Mm-hmm.
And then it doesn't look good when people are telling me that you're soliciting them to get rid of her. If you know something, sweetheart, listen to me. And I can't be no more straight up to you than this. This is the time. Because he's not going home tonight. And if he gets you involved in this, you're not going to see your kids again.
Brenda Smith, Heather's boss at the Iron Skillet. Obscura is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help when you need it. So your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations. Obscura is brought to you by True Diagnostic. Chronological age is your birthday. Biological age is how old your body really is. True Diagnostic gives you your biological age and health markers, plus a simple, personalized 90-day plan after analyzing over 1 million data points. Biological age is the strongest predictor of disease, risk, and mortality. True age measures biological age versus chronological age and your current pace of aging. It includes symphony age, tracking the health of 11 organ systems, heart, brain, lungs, immune system, etc. It gives your top three aging actions you can take to slow or reverse aging. 86% of True Age users who follow the plan reduce their biological age. Order online and the kit ships right to your door. It's a quick, simple finger prick at home, then drop it in the prepaid return package. Your only job, follow the three recommendations for 90 days, then retest to see the progress. It uses advanced epigenetic testing to analyze over 1 million biomarkers, identifying the three most important actions you take over 90 days to improve your health. Trusted by top longevity clinics and health professionals, not just consumers at home. Right now, my listeners get 20% off TrueDiagnostic.com using code Obscura20 at checkout. That's TrueDiagnostic.com and use code Obscura20 for 20% off today. Choose True Age, True Health, or the Combo Kit as a one-time purchase or subscription. Was aware of the unstable relationship between Heather and Joshua. In the fall of 2008, Heather lived with Ben McCollum and seemed content in that arrangement. On December 26, 2008, Heather and Joshua married unexpectedly. 6 days later, Joshua threatened to kill Heather, resulting in his arrest and a month-long stay in the county jail. Shortly before his release, two law enforcement officers visited Heather at the Petro station to discuss Joshua. After that meeting, Brenda Smith advised Heather not to agree to Joshua's release, warning her that he might actually kill her once free. Smith also suggested that Heather should not announce her plans to take the children and leave, given Joshua's nature.
If he couldn't have her, nobody else could.
I just don't think he has it in him to hurt her. I really don't. I mean,
he's a violent, very violent person. And I'm just giving you an opportunity, okay? Because of what's in your stomach. You don't need to flush your life, because he's unflushed his.
Oh, I know.
Everybody makes mistakes, and he's made a bad mistake. He got pissed off, and his rage got the best of him, okay?
But see, you know, the only reason why I think Jason and Jamie would do that is because part of the reason why Jamie's on felony probation is because I told everything I knew about when he was.
I'm not only talking about them.
I know.
I'm not only talking about them. I'm talking about the incident where you talked to Christy. I'm talking about the incident that you were in the truck, and y'all were going to the store. And that's when you offer somebody $500. I'm also talking to, just hear me out. Listen to these points that I'm trying to explain to you.
Because
if I'm looking at it like this, let a jury look at it like this. Where you guys are in a triangle.
Oh, that's a mess.
You guys are in a triangle. I don't know if y'all all had relationships together, but that's your business if you did. But I'm getting rumors that you guys did. I can care less. Okay?
Jamie.
I could care less. But I'm telling you, right now you guys are in a triangle. And look where it's at. Okay? You got him leading both of you guys on. You got him loving her more than he loves you. And I'm just being honest. He wants her, she don't want him. He wants to take the kids, but he knows that's how. The only way he can financially support himself is having those kids. Because if she take the kids from him, he gotta pay child support. Okay?
Well, I know about
child support. He took her credit cards. Did he tell you that?
I was under the impression that she left him because she was coming back. She's left and came back so many other times.
No. He took her cards. If you think I need to know something, it's probably best that you tell me. Because I hate to have to come back to you.
Yeah, I know.
Okay? And then put all this weight on you. I'm trying my best. Because of the position that you're in.
I know.
Okay.
I mean,
where did he go that night? How long was he gone? The night that he claimed that he picked the kids up and he met her up at the Petro.
You'd have to ask his mom because that's where he was living. I was at my mom's.
You didn't talk to him that night?
On the phone.
Did she talk to him the next day?
Yeah, on the phone.
How was he acting after she left?
No, I mean, she's left before and it's always been the same. He's like, I don't, you know, I've got the kids. I'm kind of don't know what I'm supposed to do from here. I was having trouble getting them enrolled in school, you know, kind of whole confused kind of thing. Don't know what to do because he had two kids.
Let me ask you something. As a woman, you and him in a relationship, you got kids together. You call yourself, I'll pack my bags and haul ass, you can have the kids. Okay. Do you think I'm going to let your mom type up a letter and just me sign it? Or am I going to say, I sign it with my rights to you right now? Well, Josh, you can have the kids.
She signed a letter back in August when she got with Ben McCullough saying that she was going to give Josh full custody of Mackenzie because she couldn't handle her.
Mackenzie, maybe. And I'm not saying this letter exists.
Yeah.
Maybe.
But
the boy, she loved that boy. Loved that boy. And would never give Josh the boy.
On the morning shift of Sunday, February 15th, 2009, Heather received an emergency phone call at work and expressed worry about her children. She told her boss it was from Joshua. Heather finished her shift at 3 p.m. and left, after which Brenda Smith never saw her again. Shortly after Joshua's arrest in January, a group including members of the Circle gathered at the mobile home, shared by Heather and Joshua, drinking together. Joshua and his mother had prepared a letter for Heather to rewrite, intended to drop the charges and secure his release. Amelia presented the letter to Heather, but she refused to cooperate. Witnesses reported that Amelia grew angry, grabbed Heather by the hair, and that's when the knife incident occurred. She held the knife to Heather's throat briefly to pressure her. Others intervened, and the situation calmed down. Everyone involved acknowledged that alcohol played a role in escalating the event. Afterward, Amelia and Heather reconciled enough to be civil.
I understand how hard it is for me to believe this of you, okay? I may not be as soft-hearted as Brian, okay?
I don't expect you to be.
Okay, but understand that I've talked to you.
Yeah.
Extensively.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've looked you dead in your eye, and I've given you opportunity after opportunity.
I didn't think he was capable of anything to you.
I understand that, you don't think he's capable, but those things happen. He had those conversations with you. You had opportunity from day one, minute one, when you came and sat down here with me to say, hey, look, I don't know if this means anything, but I need to let you know this. You told me you know nothing, nothing at all. Wiped your hands clean. But now you're sitting here telling me that he showed up to your house the next morning, okay, that he's gotten into a conversation with you, and that he's told you that he's done something with Heather, and that if you try to leave him, he will do the same thing to you. And that he spent time back there in the backyard.
Well, see, I've already told you guys that he had been talking to him about cleaning up the yard and all that.
Yeah, exactly. Listen to what you just said. You told us that he talked to your mom about cleaning up the yard.
Yeah.
You say nothing about him being back there behind the trailer. You said nothing about that.
Well, because my mom's the one that told me that.
You know, you said nothing about that to me. Just understand where I'm coming from.
Yeah, I see
where
you're coming from.
Okay? It's kind of hard for me to believe what you're saying. I don't have any physical evidence to back your story up.
Well, to be honest with you, I really didn't believe anything he had told me. I thought he was talking out of his ass, to be honest with you.
And still, that's something still I need to know.
And until you came back.
That wasn't the first time I talked to you. That wasn't the second time I talked to you. It was probably the third or fourth time that I talked to you. That now, after I told you that you're on the carpet, that it's possible that her body's at that house. It's possible that she was choked out and that you knew about it and possibly witnessed it. That's when you took some time to come up with your story, which is, I understand it and I take it, but it's hard for me to grasp on it. You understand that?
Yeah, I do. But that's why I told you after you spoke to me back there, after you came back from my mom's, that I took time to think about everything that had been going on. Was when I asked the doctor to take us back, I didn't wait for you to come back to me.
I wasn't coming back, I told you.
Well, I know.
I told you I wasn't coming back.
But that's why I asked. Because things started to come together. And
if there's something else that needs to come together, it needs to come together now.
I don't know anything else. All I know
if you saw her.
But see, I didn't.
If you've seen her in that trailer.
I have.
If you've seen her getting put in the hole. If you saw him digging something.
See, I don't know why he would be back there, but my mom could tell you. And that's what I told the dad to spy me. So just give my mom a call. Ask her about the comments he's made.
Shouldn't we talk to your mom? And she's not telling us the same thing. She's not telling us that.
About what the comments he's made about cleaning up the yard and being back
home? We asked her when the last time Jamie been there. When the last time Josh been there. She's told us.
Did she tell you how she was in the back?
No.
I didn't tell
I'm telling you. Have I lied to you? Do I have any reason to lie to you? Mm-hmm. Do you have reason to lie to me?
From where you're sitting, I guess so.
Mm-hmm. Haven't you lied to me?
Well, I lied by omission.
Haven't you lied to me?
Yeah.
It's like pregnant. You ain't pregnant a little bit. You either pregnant or you're not pregnant. Okay? And it doesn't look good that you lied to me about something so serious. And now that I've come to you and told you something, is now that you're coming off of...
Because I'm scared.
...with this story.
I'm scared.
I understand. And I've taken into consideration that you're scared.
I'm scared of that man. I thought he was full of crap.
That's serious. To know that this girl is missing.
I honestly...
He said you gave him the cards.
From where?
From her.
I haven't seen her since January. And see, that's when I told the detective to spy me. Why?
He said you gave her the cards. He said you gave him the key to Social Security.
Why won't she come to my mom's house? Let me ask you that. These are things that don't add up. Why won't she come there?
I didn't say she came there alive.
Okay, and I don't have a vehicle. So, and at the time, my mom did not have a van.
It's possible.
And I was home. There's multiple people
that are
talking about
that you're home. You're home. That's true.
So
he could have brought her to your house. I don't know if she's dead or alive when she came.
Jason Lotshaw, who had grown up with Amelia and Jamie Acombe, became part of the unfolding events. Shortly before Joshua was released from jail, Heather moved in with Jamie Acombe. Heather used a check from a woman's rape crisis center to put down the deposit on the apartment, likely connected to the domestic violence from Joshua. On February 15, 2009, Acombe watched Heather's two children while she worked her morning shift at the Iron Skillet. She returned home after work, and Acombe left to handle some errands. When he came back around 8 o'clock that morning, Heather and the children were no longer there. He received a phone call from Joshua Folgham, who informed him that he and Heather had reconciled. Based on that, Acombe moved out of the apartment. He never saw Heather again. Listener, for now, we leave this tragic saga where fractured lives intersected. We're left with the lingering chill of unspoken tensions and brewing storms. But the darkness deepens from here. In the next episode of Obscura, we'll plunge into the heart of the murder itself, unravel the chaotic fallout that ensnared families and investigators alike, and trace the paths to the courtroom where justice weighed on the scales of guilt and consequence. Join us then as we confront the raw aftermath of the betrayal turned fatal. Until next time, thank you for listening, and keep the fire burning.